Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
That is all over. It makes all that money on.
It's her butt that's all over, not her. It's literally her derriere, but go ahead.
She's pretty good looking, too. The card features a patch worn on the sleeve of Skeen's jersey from his major league debut and an autograph of his 2024 NL Rookie of the Year card. Anyway, the Pirates and Skeens want this card. I don't know, and Q, maybe you can explain this in a minute. Here's what they're offering up for the card, and there's only one of it. It was the only one printed, the way I understand it. They're giving him two season tickets behind home plate at PNC Park for the next 30 years. Whoa. Two season tickets.
Wow.
Behind home plate.
Oh, it gets better.
Where the Pirates play for the next 30 years. An exclusive meet and greet with Skeens, two autographed Skeens jerseys, a softball game for 30 people at PNC Park with coaching from former team members, batting practice and warm up with the team, and an experience at their spring training facility.
How did he find it?
In a pack.
We're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Libby Dunn, who is the LSU gymnast, has also offered up seats in her suite for the young 11-year-old. Now, how did this one and only one card ever end up in an 11-year-old's hand in Los Angeles?
So the company that creates these cards, they literally...
Which is Topps.
Right. They make all the like baseball cards. And on that card, it's got his signature on it, which is like an electronic signature, but it's his signature. And he's wearing his rookie patch, which baseball started doing, I think, last year, is that when you're brought up for your major league debut and for the entire year, they put a patch on your shoulder, on your jersey, that says that you're a rookie. So this is a one-of-one card. There was only one card in the world of it, and Paul Skeen wants it. So he said that, you know, whoever found it, he was going to try and get it from somebody, and now the Pirates are trying to sweeten the pot to get it. I'm just happy that an 11-year-old got it and not some, like, card collector in Detroit who, you know, lives in his parents' basement.
Wow.
That escalated quickly.
Wow. But I think it's, you know, what's the value of that card? You know, I don't, from like a financial standpoint, I don't know. I think that, you know, if Paul Skeens is a phenomenal pitcher, like, let's get that out of the way. He won the National League Rookie of the Year. He was in contention for the Cy Young, for the NL Cy Young Award. Like, he's a phenomenal pitcher. First round draft pick by the Pirates. So
what, real quick, what I love about the 11-year-old finding it is the story that I read from KTLA says he's an 11-year-old baseball card collector.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't just access, because I was like, how would an 11-year-old, I'd open one of those things and be like, I don't know who any of these people are and probably throw it in the trash.
But if he's a collector,
he knew what he was looking for.
He may not give it up.
Because you know what this card's going to be? If Paul Skeens turns out to be as good of a player as a lot of people think he's going to be, and I know that because I follow the Pirates, that card in 30 years, a one-of-a-kind rookie card, is going to be worth a ton of money.
Yeah. So this wasn't a contest to begin with?
Yeah, it was a contest.
Oh,
like,
it was?
Like, who could find the card?
Okay.
Who would buy the Topps pack that had that one Paul Skeens card in it, and there's not a second one?
So what are the odds that anyone found it at all, or it didn't get lost in shipping to any one of the retailers like Walmart that sells
That's part of the contest.
The fact that someone even found it is crazy.
And knew what they had, and he's 11 years old.
So what do you do? Do you sit on it?
I mean, he lives in L.A. If he lived around Pittsburgh or in Pittsburgh, that's a hell of a deal. Behind home plate for 30 years, mm-hmm. and, you know, the experience. And
I want $5 million. Give me $5 million now. It would set him up for the rest of his life. And because you can't ask an 11-year-old to sit on something, I suppose you could, for that long. You could say to most 11-year-olds, I'll give you $100 for it. Okay.
All right.
You know, yeah. Give him something of value now. For someone else to handle what it could grow into later. Here's the other deal. I don't know who this Skeens guy is.
All Skeens.
Whatever. He could, you know, I hope it doesn't happen, but he could get hit by a bus tomorrow. And then the value goes down.
Or up.
So I would take cash and run. And by the way, the Pirates aren't the only ones offering up a deal. A San Antonio, Texas sports card shop posted its own bounty offer.
Mm.
They offered him an opened container of ice cream and $23.78 in cash.
Well, how can you turn that down?
I mean, ice cream, yeah.
For an 11-year-old? Mm-hmm. He's going to go with that and not the Pirates.
Seth Meyers said he would offer the child and his family VIP tickets to attend a taping of Late Night with Seth Meyers if he can just, quote, look at the card for 1 second. The answer to that would have to be no. You got to put that card in a vault.
Oh, yeah.
You can't travel with that card.
Or a safe deposit box.
It's
not in the house. It is not in the house. Yeah, we know, Texture. It was a contest, dummy. We just said that.
You know who else does that from time to time? Wine. 19 Crimes Wine a few years ago printed a very small number of corks. And if you opened the cork and on the cork it said whatever, because mm-hmm. there's different actual prisoners on the front bottle of that wine, you won like $1 million and a trip to Napa and something. The contest ended like, I don't know, let's say November or whatever that year was. In December or January, I pop open a bottle and one of those flipping corks is in my hand. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I go online and I look and the contest had already ended.
Oh,
I know.
By the way, speaking of games and stuff, contests, you have ruined me. Oh, yeah. Maybe I did turn you into a skeptic. I'm sorry, but you have ruined me ever since you won The Price is Right. And because you won a trip to Napa Valley.
Yeah.
And you also won a trip to Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And you turned down the trip to Puerto Rico. And I didn't know this at the time because you cannot leave California without paying the game show taxes on everything that you win.
Right. The taxes on all of that stuff were much higher than what that trip was worth.
Right. So they'll say, like, when we watch Wheel of Fortune,
you can
go
to Puerto Rico for $7,000. I'm like, are we getting our own plane to get there?
Yeah, because a trip to Puerto Rico for a week is not $7,000. It's maybe $2,500, $3,000 max.
If that.
Yeah. And so now we're watching Wheel of Fortune, and every night they always give away at least one trip.
You do not want a trip.
And whoever wins the trip is going to be the winner of the Wheel of Fortune, more likely than not, because they always say these trips are like $7,000 or $8,000.
You're not even flying first class.
I know. And so you know these trips aren't worth that much, but this person is going to have to pay taxes on it, I since learned, when Dana won The Price is Right years ago.
I'm sorry to educate you.
We'll sit there on the couch, and they'll say, you've just won a trip to sunny Southern California, blah, 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 $8,000. And I look at T and I go, they're going to turn it down. They're going to have to turn it down because the taxes are going to be like $3,000.
You do not want to win a trip. Here's the other deal. You only have 1 year to take the trip, and it is non-transferable. So every once in a while on a game show, it'll be like, you've won a trip to Italy, a trip to a trip to here, and a trip to beautiful Vienna. Ain't nobody taking that because the taxes on that are going to be $30,000. You have to take it in a calendar year. How many people do you know, Scott, even right, if the ride over there is free and they kick you hotel, could afford to go 3 or 4 different international places in 1 year? I mean, if you're retired and independently wealthy, maybe, but if you see like it's a college kid that they get so excited and I'm like, buddy, now, it's not happening.
Here's the only question I have. Like, let's say like the guy last night won a trip to, let's just say it was Italy. It wasn't, but let's say it was Italy.
Okay.
And it was $7,000. And then he ended up winning the big bonus round at the end. And it was $40,000. Can he use those winnings, which, by the way, after they're taxed, you walk out with $20,000. because the game show tax, I think, is 10%, and then you have to pay income taxes, et cetera. Can he use that $20,000 to pay his taxes on his $7,000 trip to Italy?
Yeah, theoretically. Okay. That's why you want to win cash.
Yeah.
And all.
That's why you want to play Plinko.
All of the prizes are taxed as income. All of it.
The non-resident game show tax in California is indeed 10%.
That's what I thought.
I had to get a loan from my dad. I was like,
I can't leave the state.
Anything just happened.
Well, she won two trips,
I need
a damn
to borrow
car.
$3,500, and I can't tell you why. He's like, are you in jail? Well, I'm like, no.
And I'll give you
kind of, sort of, game show jail.
I'll give her credit, Dan. When she came back from California, we knew she was going on The Price Is Right, or going to The Price
Is
Right.
To try to get on.
And I knew she had gotten at least called up because I said, how did it go? And she goes, not allowed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, she's like my sister that I never had. And
I want to tell you so bad, but I can't.
It was 3 months from when she got back to when that episode aired. And she never, not even to me, never said a word. Never said a single word. And she won the whole damn thing.
The craziest thing about that, the most work you will have to do if you win anything, and if you've been in a golf tournament and won a car, you know what I'm about to say. To win the car, it is a losing proposition unless that car is worth so much money you can get something out of it, because you cannot take possession of a car or sell a car that you do not own. And when you win a car, you do not own that car. You know what you have to do? You have to tag, title, and register it in order to own it, in order to sell it. And the moment you tag, title, and register it and sell it, it's considered used.
You just won a Toyota Corolla.
Yes. So
but
if you win...
You did keep the car.
No, I did not. That car in California was valued at $27,000. The actual value, we ended up selling it for $11,000. $1,000
right,
to help cover the tax bill. We had to cough up the money to tag, title, and register it and get it here. And then the minute they deliver it to the
dealership,
it's no longer considered new.
Even though nobody drove it a mile.
Zero. I said, what if we put it on the back of a truck, like inside of a truck, and you drive it to me? There'll be 0 miles on it. Doesn't matter.
It's already sold. That's
it's
right.
Already used once you take possession. Isn't that crazy?
It's dumb is what it is. Telephone number here is 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks.
So the headline says it all. Naked woman crashes stolen car, then takes a shower in a stranger's home.
Of course.
Indiana police say, kids, don't do drugs. A naked woman was arrested after crashing a stolen car, according to police in Indiana. It happened January 19th. The 37-year-old resident crashed the stolen car into a tree and a basketball hoop, according to a Facebook post by the LaPorte County Sheriff's Office. A homeowner called police and a deputy was dispatched. The deputy arrived, found the silver 2007 BMW, and determined it had, in fact, crashed head-on into a tree. The homeowner then told the deputy the woman was now in his home showering. That's when the deputy entered the residence, walked toward the bathroom, knocked on the door, and asked the woman to come out. She did.
Did she put her clothes on?
She made her way out of the bathroom. She was wrapped in a towel. She identified herself, and after further investigating, it was determined the woman stole the car from a nearby home before realizing she needed a shower.
Where's the drugs and alcohol?
She was taken to a hospital to be evaluated. She has been charged with theft, unauthorized entry of a vehicle used in a crime,
unauthorized entry into a home,
criminal mischief, and public nudity.
That sounds like an Onion article.
I love this. Police report the nude woman, who did not live at the house, was inside and taking a shower.
No DUI, no drugs.
37-year-old Michelle Reeves stole the car, by the way, from a nearby driveway while it was idling in the driveway.
I can't do that, man. Let's take a gander at Michelle Reeves.
I think she's had a rough couple years. She's had a rough go of it.
Yeah, kids, don't do drugs.
Had a rough go of it. Where do does the naked part come in?
I was going to say, approximately how many teeth is she missing?
It is January in Indiana. I don't know what the temperatures are. But she stole the car. I want to be clear. She didn't steal the car, run inside, undress, and shower. She was naked when she stole the car.
Aren't you supposed to be?
I don't know. Scott, I've never stolen a car.
You ever been naked?
Not while stealing a car.
You ever been in a Turkish prison? You ever been to Dodge City? Police have arrested a suspect in the unsolved murder of a Honolulu teenager whose death rocked the high school where her body was discovered 48 years ago.
Oh, God.
They say the man arrested, Gideon Castro, was one of her former schoolmates who joined the U.S. Army Reserve after he graduated. Don Momohera was found dead the morning of March 21st, 1977, on the second floor at McKinley High School in Hawaii's capital. She was 16 years old and a student there in her sophomore year. Mm-hmm. Officers at the time showed up to a gruesome scene. I'm not going to get into the details. It doesn't matter. Although police retrieved an unknown man's DNA sample from the teenager's clothing, they could not identify a suspect. Authorities would not develop meaningful leads in the homicide until 2020. After a cold case detective resubmitted evidence for forensic exams using updated technology.
Bingo! You can run, you cannot hide.
Read that, Life 360, 23andMe. By September of 2023, the DNA test led investigators to two possible suspects, either Gideon Castro or his brother William Castro, who had both, by the way, been interviewed in the immediate aftermath of Momohera's killing. Back then, Gideon Castro, who committed the crime, allegedly, told police that he met Momohera at a school dance in 1976, just before he graduated. William Castro, his brother, in those interviews, said he and Momohera periodically talked on the phone but denied ever being in any kind of relationship with her. Gideon Castro will be extradited back to Honolulu.
Good.
Where he lived in Chicago.
Did you see this? He was arrested at a nursing home.
In Utah. His brother lives in Chicago. He's 66.
Okay. So I was going to say, is he a worker or a resident?
He might have been a worker. He's okay. Now 66 years old. Well, because that would be young to be in a nursing home. Huh.
You can run, but you cannot hide.
Not these days.
If Aunt Marge did a DNA test.
Yep.
You know what I love the most about this?
I love it.
All of these murderers and rapists wandering around amongst us.
Scared.
You know that they might not watch Dateline every week, but they read a headline or two. And there are so many of these stories that it's all coming out because of the DNA family tree stuff. And you know, for Christmas, they're all sitting around a table. And Rapey McRapey, they're like, what should we get Grandma for Christmas? And someone goes, you know, I was thinking, well, let's do that 23andMe. And you know, all of the men that are roaming around among us that have done these horrible things are like, no.
That's unreliable.
It's a huge invasion of privacy.
Yeah, I have a friend who did that. And no, they said he was 100% African-American. He's white.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, totally unreliable.
The clock is ticking.
Good.
And those roosters will come home to roost.
Good.
And nest or whatever the roosters do when they come home. I'm not sure, but they will find you.
They cock-a-doodle-do?
Do the roosters nest or roost? What comes home to roost? Anyway, police are coming.
Chickens come home to roost.
Police are coming.
913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So we're talking about this, what was a cold case out of Honolulu, 48-year-old murder mystery. It has now been solved. A young Dawn Momohera was found dead at her high school in March of 1977. And they couldn't figure it. They had some DNA. But they couldn't figure it out. They actually did interview the man who would later be arrested for her murder. But he had an alibi. Years later, we presume through 23andMe or whatever those genetic testing sites are. I know there's more than just 23andMe. They finally matched the DNA to a Gideon Castro, and he was arrested, charged with second-degree murder. He's now 66 years old, and he was arrested at a nursing home in Utah. We presume he was there as an employee, but we don't know. Richard in Blue Springs. Richard, hello.
Hi. This kind of caught my ear because I lived in Honolulu at the time, and I was working there. I went to the university, and two big things happened in 1977. This was one of them. But this happened just before. This was a big deal because, first of all, McKinley High School is one of those very well-known local high schools. A lot of famous people came out of it.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, it was quickly pushed aside because the others, the second bigger news that came out was the death of Elvis Presley that same year. And Elvis Presley was always known to be, you know, ohana or family in Hawaii because of what he did for Pearl Harbor Memorial and a few other things. But getting back to this murder in McKinley, the name O'Hara is very unusual. It came from a well-known family there. I knew the district attorney that was in charge of the case at the time. As a matter of fact, his son worked for me, or his son's girlfriend worked for me, and he was murdered also.
Oh, God.
Wow. And he worked for Don Ho. Don Ho, at the time, was really the kingpin in the local marijuana trade. A lot of people didn't know this. But he was murdered because he said too much, and they wanted to silence him. So those were the big deals. And I'm glad they finally solved this case.
Yeah, what's sad, and Richard, thank you for the call, is that he was a suspect and interviewed in 1977.
Mm-hmm. So before, was his brother.
We didn't even know what DNA was back then.
Right.
So, you know, he was allowed to go on and live his life, which is sickening. And, you know, are there, I always ask, are there other victims out there? I don't believe you just wake up one day and strangle and rape a 16-year-old and then go off and live your life as if nothing has happened and you don't go on to harm other people. I don't believe that.
Well, he joined the military right after he left Honolulu.
I don't think that that would make me feel any better in light of the details of what he did to her.
Well,
I'm just saying, yeah, they need to start looking. Where was he living all over the country?
What's unsolved?
And what's unsolved?
Right. I love that, to your point in the previous segment, there have to be not caught rapists and murderers all over the country praying every night to whatever God it is that they believe in, evildoers, that somebody in their family doesn't, in their very close family, does not do a 23andMe.
Or that the police department doesn't have the funding or the wherewithal to contact one of those companies and plug it in.
913-586-7798. Roy in Topeka. Roy, hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, yeah.
Hey, you know, you bring up an interesting point about 23andMe, and I'm just going to give an example. No, it has nothing to do with murder and stuff, but those kits are just really, can be just very shocking. As an example, my sister and I, we usually donate blood at the business that we're doing, and she come and asked me what was my blood type. I told her it was O positive, and she looked at me, she said, O positive? Huh. And I didn't think anything of it. And so for Christmas, guess what I get? A 23andMe kit. And she says, go ahead and just do it.
Okay.
I said, okay. So it took me about 2 months to do it, and I finally did. And when I went onto the website, and I looked, and I saw that my sisters were not sisters, but half-sisters.
Yeah.
I said, what?
Yeah.
It was pretty shocking to me, because all this time, you know, my family was telling me that I was a biological son of my dad, but I wasn't. And my mom hid it from me for all these years. And when you said the interesting thing about how people dread the thought of giving out those 23andMe, I knew my mom at that time. She probably wanted to keep that a secret to her grave. And
did you, I had to ask Roy, did you bring it up? You're like the 12th person I know that's told this story, and two or three of them I know personally. Like, this happened to people I know.
I did bring it up with her. Now,
with your mother, is she still with us?
No, things in perspective, my mom was a missionary in the church, and she just did not want that to get out. And I asked her about it, and she said, yeah, it happened such and such time, but I don't remember who the person was. I don't remember. And so for a whole year, I was just kind of upset about it. Because there was always this time where I would take her out to dinner and all this stuff, and there was just this feeling that I could never get close to her, and I just couldn't understand why. But after that test, I said, okay, now I know why.
Have you found your dad? Like,
well, hang on, Roy. Your mother was alive when you got the results, so you were able to talk to her about that?
Yes.
Okay. And to Dana's question, you never found your biological father?
No, I go on 23andMe and I take a look and I see all these different relatives and I see the tree that goes connected to it and all this. And I reach out to these people and I try to get information because I see that side of the family and it's just blank. There's no information. Oh. I try to reach out to see exactly if I can get close. But no avail at this moment.
Was your father still alive? The dad that you knew growing up, was he alive when you got these results?
No, he had passed away. And the strange thing about it, my stepdad had told her, well, should we tell him? And she said, no, they did not want to tell me.
Yeah.
When I was younger. And it was just one of those things. And like I said, these kids can be an eye-opener, not only for the murderers and everything else, but for those little hidden secrets. Dana, you said you had 12 other people, and I'm pretty sure they felt the same way.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this. One of them, it was a neighbor. Instead of dad, it was a neighbor. One of them, you know, there are from back in the day, Scott, and even now, but back in the day, if there was, God forbid, a sex assault, women did not talk about those things back then.
Yeah.
And certainly if it was an affair, you didn't go around saying, oh, did you, you know, they just didn't.
Last question, Roy. Knowing what you know now, would you have taken the test?
Oh, God, that's a good question. Yes, because there was points missing in my life that I just did not understand. You know, when growing up as a kid, everybody wants that acceptance, all that, you know, they want that real acceptance of your parents. You know, I was a good kid. I tried to do everything. My grades were great. Everything I did out and listened to what they said, but I could never get that one acceptance, you know?
Huh.
So I couldn't understand it, but now I do.
Yeah.
Roy, thank you for the call,
Roy,
and for your honesty.
And Roy, you know what? When it comes time, you'll know it and keep searching. I do think that there's some benefit to some closure in some of those cases.
Well, there's a health benefit
to
knowing who your real father was, biological father, and, you know, are you at risk of certain cancers or certain other diseases?
What percentage of these do you guess uncovers the mystery half-sibling? I think it is much higher than they will report.
I would bet it's somewhere between 5 and 10%.
I was going to say 5 and 10% too. That's funny you just said that.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So we've been a little flurry of activity in here during the break.
I said, just got to go, was it Ancestry or 23andMe?
It
you
was
and
23
I joined.
23andMe.
We did it. How many years ago was that?
Oh my gosh. 9, maybe. By the way, we enter our 14th year together in about a week.
Do we really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you bringing a cake?
I might bring a cookie. But anyway, so we're logging into 23andMe because it's been so long because of the story we just reported on.
I just never updated any of this.
By the way, for those of you who know how to do math, what is the fraction on 18.7%? What is that fraction?
We're trying to figure out because I am...
Because we're not mathing in the middle of the show.
Right. I am definitely... I know that I think it's 3/16 Native American. And that's... I believe what came back percentage-wise. Like, it actually showed, that's what you are. Because I've got my Indian card.
Well, I guess 18% would be 3/16. Never mind. Don't do the fraction, because that's how we got the 18.7%.
I don't know. I'm looking it up, because every once in a while, I get an email that says, you have 16 new relatives. And I've never gone in to update it to check and look, because you are linked biologically, Scott, to thousands and thousands of people, some of whom live in places you're like, what? I don't have any relatives
like
there.
Fifth cousin twice removed or something like that. Yeah. I mean, they did that years ago that I think it's Princess Diana and Elton John were actually related.
Way back.
Right. You know, they're like ninth cousins twice removed or something
here
stupid.
Here it is. Welcome to my family tree. I'm going to see if I can find the number because the last time I looked, it was a shocking number. Like, of course, you know that you have third and fourth and fifth cousins twice removed or whatever. But the number for all of us will surprise you if you've never gone to look. It was a very, well, it was thousands and thousands of people.
I mean, in one way or another, aren't we all related in some way?
I suppose.
913-586-7798.
I mean, I got people, there's photos of some of these people. I'm like, who are you? What if I met somebody in a grocery store and we started dating and we were like,
well,
yeah,
we would have to be closely related.
Do you have 23andMe? So do I. And then I pull it up and he's part of my tree. I'm a kid with four eyeballs.
Well, no, that's not that I'm an expert on incest, but that's not how it works.
It's outlawed in most places and strongly frowned upon in others.
How far removed are you comfortable with this hunk in the grocery store?
Just moved to Arkansas.
I want to see connected. How many am I connected
to? Man, Arkansas catching strays.
Here it is. I have 1,500 relatives in here. 1,500. Like, how is that possible? There's 1,500 people roaming alive right now that are in this app because, that are related
like,
to me.
Like, I have my family genealogy at home. My grandfather, Mayo Sr., did it years ago, and it goes all the way back to the family being from Preston, England, and we came over in the 1600s.
Okay.
Or I think it was the late 1600s. Well, the family name back then was Park, P-A-R-K-E. They later changed it to Parks, but, you know.
Why?
I don't know.
There were two of them sitting on a park bench.
Right. But you go back that far.
It sounds better, plural.
And they had two kids, or back then they had like eight kids. And then all those eight go off and get married. They each have eight kids. And now the family's gigantic. And over a course of 400 years, like I bet I'm related to half of Kansas City in a weird way. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way.
We should not be having babies anymore.
In 2 minutes, Quentin is our producer today. Sam returns tomorrow. Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ.